Genesis 3:17. And unto Adam he said, Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree, of which I commanded thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. The husband was the last in the transgression. 1 Timothy 2:14. And therefore the punishment is inflicted on him last. But the Lord threatens no punishment to the man here in generation. God makes no mention of the pains of generation in his case. Therefore the punishment of the husband lies in the fury of lust, inflamed by the poison of Satan throughout his whole body, but without the pains of the woman. His duties as husband, however, are laden with punishment. For, as it belongs to the man to feed, to rule, to guide, and to educate his family, those duties cannot be performed by him without great trouble and distress, nor without the hardest labors. The duty laid of God upon the woman is to obey her husband. But with what difficulty is this very performance of her duty obtained? I say nothing about the rule of the man over others, who are not of his immediate family and household. Hence it was that the philosophers of old were led to wonder from what cause in nature it could possibly arise that men could govern any wild beast more easily than rule their fellow men. This is the ground of Xenophon's complaint when he says, It is easier to manage any other animal than to rule man. The duties of a husband indeed are great and noble, which are to cultivate the earth and to perform any other work by which his wife and children may be supported, to rule his house and family, to govern states and kingdoms, and to teach and instruct those of his own house, and others also, unto godliness and moral duties. All these noble duties, however, are always attended with their punishment of original sin. They cannot be performed without the greatest distress, of which we have examples before our eyes daily. First of all, on account of the sin of Adam himself, the earth is cursed. For the expression the Latin translator renders in thy work, for thy sake. The Latin interpreter was deceived by the similarity of the letters. He read the Hebrew as being to signify to cultivate the earth or to till the ground. From this it appears how awful the calamity of sin is, seeing that even the earth, which is innocent in itself and committed no sin, is nevertheless compelled to bear sin's curse, and, as the Apostle Paul expresses it, Romans 8:20 and 21, is made subject to vanity, from which, however, it shall be delivered in the last day, and for which also it waits in earnest expectation, verse 19. For Pliny calls the earth a kind, gentle, and indulgent mother, and also a perpetual handmaid of service to mankind. And yet, as the Apostle Paul here shows, this kind earth herself is compelled to bear her curse also. In the first place, because she does not bear those good things for man and beast which she would have borne had man not fallen. And in the next place, because she does bear many hurtful things which, but for man's sin, she would not have borne, such as the destructive weeds, darnel, tares, nettles, thorns, thistles, etc., to which may be added poison, noxious reptiles, and other like hurtful things brought into the creation by sin. For my own part, I entertain no doubt that before the sin of the fall, the air was more pure and healthful, the water more wholesome and fructifying, and the light of the sun more bright and beautiful. So that the whole creation, as it now is, reminds us in every part of the curse inflicted on it, on account of the sin of the fall. Yet some remnants of the original blessing of God still rest upon it, in that being compelled, as it were, to do so by the hard labor of man, it still continues to produce things necessary for our use, although those very things are impeded and deformed by briars and thorns, that is, by useless and noxious trees, bushes, and weeds, which the divine anger ceases not to sow among them. The original curse, moreover, was afterwards greatly increased by the deluge, when all the good trees were rooted up and destroyed, barren sands accumulated, and both noxious herbs and beasts multiplied. in those very places where Adam, before his sin, used to walk among the most fruitful trees, over most fertile meadows, and in the midst of roses and flowers of every kind, there nettles and briars and other annoying plants abound, and in such quantities that the good and useful plants are well nigh choked by them. Only look at the field now, just prepared by the plow for receiving the seed. No sooner is that seed sown than immediately there spring up the destructive darnel and the tares, which grow even faster than the fruits, which are for the use and nourishment of life. And if the former were not plucked up by the constant care and toil of the husbandman, they would daily grow to such an extent that these very destructive weeds of the curse would choke the good seed altogether. The earth herself indeed is innocent, and would of its own free nature bring forth all things which are the best and most excellent. But she is prevented from doing so by the curse inflicted on man for his sin. As, therefore, woman endures the punishment of sin in her body, a punishment she is mercifully enabled to bear, with which she is afflicted in the bringing forth of children, so the husband has to endure his punishment in the government of his household, while, with all kinds of difficulty, labor, and distress, he rules his house and provides for his family. And justly so, for it was on his own account that the field was cursed. Whereas, before he sinned, no part of the earth was either barren or corrupt, but all places in it were marvelously fertile and productive. But now, on the contrary, not only is it in many parts entirely barren, but even those parts which are otherwise fruitful are deformed and defiled with tares, weeds, briars, and thorns. And this calamity is indeed great, and might well drive Adam himself and us all to choose strangling rather than life. But the whole mighty evil is rendered endurable by the promise of the woman's seed, by which the punishment of eternal death, which is infinitely greater than all this punishment of life, is wholly taken out of the way. That which next follows, "In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life," are words quite easy to understand. For who knows not how laborious the life of an husbandman is? It is not enough that he prepare the ground for receiving the seed, which is attended with great and various labor, but even when the corn is yet in the blade, each single day almost demands of him its necessary labor and toil, not to mention those almost infinite hindrances of weather, noxious vermin, etc., all which greatly augment his pain, labor, and suffering. Whereas, before the sin of the fall, not only were there no such evils and hindrances in existence, but the earth, had Adam not sinned, would have brought forth things quicker than the hope or expectation of man, as it were, unsown and unplowed. Moreover, this calamity, which sin brought into the creation, was in many respects lighter and more tolerable in their state before the flood than in the condition of the world which followed. In the antediluvian state of the curse, no other mention is made than of thorns and thistles, and labor and sweat. But now we experience numberless other additional evils. How many diseases and pestilential injuries are inflicted on the standing corn, on the plants of pulse, on trees, and finally on all the productions of the earth? How many evils are wrought by destructive birds and noxious caterpillars? Add to these evils extremes of cold and frost, thunderings, lightnings, excessive wet, winds, rivers bursting their banks, fissures of the earth, earthquakes, etc. Of none of these is any mention made in the state of things under the curse before the deluge. My firm belief is, therefore, that as the sins of men increased, the punishments of those sins increased also, and that all such punishments and evils were added to the original curse of the earth. If, however, anyone should think that Moses embraced all these latter evils in his expression of the divine curse, "Cursed is the ground for thy sake," I certainly will not contend with him. But no one surely can deny that all these evils and punishments increased as the sins of men increased. In the same manner as in the present day, we experience more frequent calamities befalling the fruits of the earth than in former times. For the world degenerates and grows worse and worse every day. Most plainly, therefore, may we here trace the evidences that all these increased calamities were inflicted on Adam as an instruction to him in the first age of the world, that an increasedly severe discipline was necessary. But by degrees this discipline, down to the times of Noah, gradually loosened, and men began to live more dissolutely and wickedly, until at length the earth was filled with violence, injustice, and tyranny. And then it was necessary that either heavier or more frequent punishments should be inflicted, just as severer diseases require severer remedies. When, therefore, in the time of Noah, the whole earth had been deluged by the flood, and every living creature, except a few souls, had been utterly destroyed, the age which immediately succeeded that of Noah lived without doubt in the fear of God. But as years rolled on, even these men became depraved, being corrupted by Satan, so that an example more terrible in its nature still was necessary to be made, as is shown in the awful destruction of Sodom and its neighboring cities, Genesis 19:24. Hence it is that the Scripture says that it was necessary that the Amorites should fill up the measure of their iniquities, Genesis 15:16. So also the whole synagogue of the Jews, when it had fallen away into heathenism and open ungodliness, was utterly destroyed. In like manner also Rome herself, as long as her ancient discipline stood sound and unrelaxed, mightily increased her power on every side, but when the storms of vice pressed hard upon her, it became necessary that her punishments also should draw upon her more closely. About the time when the gospel began to be known among us in Germany, the age became somewhat moral and tolerable. But now, when the fear of God can scarcely be found, and when vices of every description increase daily, false prophets rising among us, what else can be expected than that, when we have filled up the measure of our iniquities, either the consummation of all things will overtake us, or that Germany will suffer the due punishment of her sins? So universally true is it that when sins increase, the punishments of them increase also. According to that which I have said concerning the calamities which rest upon all the productions of the earth, so my full belief also is that even the bodies of men in the primeval ages of the world were far more healthful than they are now. This is proved by that longevity so incredible to us, which was enjoyed by the men of the primitive ages of the world before the flood. Accordingly, we do not find the Lord pronounced in the present passage any threats on Adam concerning apoplexy or leprosy or the scrofula or any other of the destructive diseases. When I was a child, the smallpox was unknown in Germany. It was first known among us when I was about 15 years of age. Now, however, even infants in the cradle are attacked by it. When this disease first made its appearance, it filled everyone with dread. But now there is so little concern about it that friends often say to each other in a pleasant joke, "The smallpox take you." So also, even unto this present age, the sweating disease has been a prevalent malady, or, as medical men term it, an epidemic. For it is universally seen that as each country of the earth has its peculiar blessings, the countries are visited and afflicted with sure and corresponding calamities. But the disease to which I have referred made its first general appearance in those midland parts of Germany, which were the farthest distant from the sea. And what is abhorrent to relate, some persons have serpent-like worms in their bowels and worms even in their brain. These last diseases were utterly unknown, I think, to the physicians of old, who nevertheless enumerate nearly 400 different kinds of disease. Now, if all these various diseases had existed in the first age of the world, how could Adam and his descendants, down to the times of Noah, have lived to such extremely old ages? Wherefore Moses, as I have said, here makes mention only of the barrenness of the earth, and of the difficulty of man's procuring his bread. Indeed, if anyone wishes to assume the orator and to display the copiousness and eloquence of his language, let him, in opening the contents of the passages before us, enumerate all the diseases and evils of the human race, which are the consequences of sin. Were he to commence that task, he would find a sea of calamities of every kind so boundless that, filled with awe and dread, he would be inclined to beg of God this one thing, that he might not be permitted to live even 1 hour in the midst of so many and mighty perils. But why do we dwell so long on these diseases only? All the creatures of God together as one mighty army are against us, and all but armed for our destruction. How many are there whom the fire and the water destroy? How much peril threatens men from ferocious and venomous beasts and other noxious creatures? Nor do they infest our bodies only, but our food of every kind, intended for our nourishment. Not to mention that we ourselves also rush upon each other in hostile slaughter and murder, just as if there were not pestilences and destructions enough besides, which threatened us on every hand. And if you look at the general pursuits and objects of men, what is this life of ours but a daily scene of contention, deception, snare, rapine, and murder? And all this in addition to those evils and calamities which hang over our heads from the external things we have mentioned. My belief is that all these things did not exist before the deluge, or, if they did exist, were not so numerous or so heavy and severe as they are now found to be. But as the sins of men increased, so, as we have said, their punishments have increased also. The calamities inflicted on Adam, therefore, were light in comparison to those inflicted on us. For the nearer the world approaches its end, with the heavier punishments and calamities is it visited. To all this evil is added that greater evil still, that the more the world is stricken, the more it hardens its forehead and becomes stupefied, as it were, and insensible of its punishment altogether, as it is written in the Proverbs, "They have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not hurt. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again." Proverbs 23:35. This blindness and obduracy exceed all the above calamities of the body. Is not our state, then, I ask, marvelous and miserable? The traces of the wrath of God, which our sin has deserved, are first of all bound up, as it were, in our bodies, and next the same wrath of God is beheld resting on the earth and on all creatures, and yet all these awful evils are disregarded by us, and our minds are filled with security and indolent unconcern. For what are the thorns, what the thistles, what the water, what the fire, what the caterpillars, what the flies, what the fleas, what the bugs, what the lice, what, I say, are all these together and separately, but so many messengers which continually preach to us of sin and of the wrath of God on its account? For before sin entered into the world, those living evils had no existence, or if they were in existence, they harmed not nor annoyed. Wherefore, to our full knowledge and sight, we are in, and live in, more than Egyptian darkness. For though all things around us remind us of the wrath of God continually, and are all but so many pricks in our eyes of admonition, we not only do not regard that wrath, but embrace this life, and enjoy it as our only delight. In the same proportion, therefore, as sins are multiplied, and self-security increases, and men grow callous and insensible under their punishments, so those punishments themselves are multiplied, not only in this life, but in that which is to come. I am here speaking of the wicked in this world. For if it were possible that men, when in hell, could possibly endure their punishments and torments in sensation only, without the consciousness at the same time that the punishments which they endured were just, such ignorance would render their torments more easy to be endured. Just in the same way as we on earth will not acknowledge our punishments, and thus we harden ourselves as it were against grief, but in hell that insensibility which now prevents us from seeing our real misery will be wholly taken away, and all the doors of our senses will be unlocked, so that we shall not only feel the pains of our punishment in our body, but our mind itself will be filled with a sense of the wrath of God, and with the confession that we have deserved the whole of that wrath by our wickedness. These are the feelings that will sharpen, and in an inconceivable degree, augment the future torments of the wicked.